From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
It's another hour of overgrown man children talking crap. It's The Dice Men Cometh, episode 68, recorded on Thursday the 23rd of April. We are adults who never stop playing games, and our families just have to deal with it. Trent, Mark and Garth here this evening. What's coming up in the show?
We have got more stuff than a stuff-a-thon in the show this week. We are going to talk about all the latest happenings in Kickstarter. We're going to talk about what we've been playing, including a modern epic. We're going to talk about the game industry, some facts, some figures, some dollars. And we have a special guest in the studio, Andrew Schwartz, the new game overlord, head boffin, man in charge at one of our friendly local game stores. He's going to join us later in the show.
And don't forget our competition.
Oh, the Grail Games competition.
Yeah, we've already had heaps of entries coming in, which is not bad considering we've only got 1 week to go.
All Trent. That and more.
Oh, shall I play
Time to play now? Loud song.
Yes. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, good, yeah. Because I've been wanting to play this song for a while. I've been waiting for it for a while. Featuring members of Corrosion of Conformity, Stone Sour, My Ruin, Randy Blythe from Lamb of God, and Dave Grohl, this is the Teenage Time Killers! Hot metal from the Teenage Time Killers. And that brings us to the beginning of the show that we call The Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent is my name. I'm joined by Mark. I'm joined by Garth, as we are every Thursday evening here on this very radio station. Or you might be listening to us via podcast. Hey, it's your choice. It's a free country. You might not be in a free country where you listen to this, as long as there's iTunes available. I don't need to know about it. I don't need to know how it is you're getting this. You might be using a VPN, some kind of geo-blocker. I don't care. I don't care. We don't discriminate.
Edward Snowden knows, though.
He knows more than what he's letting on.
And he's looking at your dick pics, Trent. Anyway.
We always start the show, with a loud song, and that's one from Teenage Time Killers. And we start the show by talking about board games we've been playing lately. And oh my God, we have played an epic. This is a big one that I think all of us... Look, it wasn't maybe top of our list, but it was certainly there and it's on a lot of people's lists.
Exactly right. And this one is huge. So we're talking about Android by Fantasy Flight. Now, I'm just going to read the front of the box because it describes it nice and simply, which is a board game of murder and conspiracy in a dystopian future for 3 to 5 players. So doesn't that sound really interesting straight away?
It makes it so simple. Makes it so simple.
And I just want to be clear, but we're talking about Android. It's not the operating system.
No.
This is not Netrunner.
No.
Either. Okay, but it is the universe that gave birth to Netrunner. Confusing.
Yes, there is. Well, there is Jinteki.
I was going to say, it's actually when Richard Garfield, inventor of Magic, invented Netrunner back in the 90s, I think it was 94, 95, 96.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was in its own world. Then when Fantasy Flight took it over, they'd already produced Android. When they did the relaunch of Netrunner, they put it in the Android universe. So that's how the two came together.
And quickly rushed out that game, Infiltration, to make it look like there was actually a suite of games.
Yeah, and there's actually 5 novels even that are published by Fantasy Flight in the Android universe.
Well, it's a pretty impressive universe. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I look at this because it's designed by Kevin Wilson and Dan Clark, and you just look at the pedigree in terms of theme that these designers bring. I mean, Kevin Wilson, you know, Game of Thrones, first edition, Descent, Arkham Horror, Civilization, Trent, that you were talking about last week. And then Dan Clark, who was part of the writers from Star Wars Edge of the Empire role-playing game that we've, you know, played a lot of over the last few months. So it's pretty impressive pedigree when you talk about game board theme.
Yeah, definitely 2 of the big guns at Fantasy Flight, that's for sure.
And yet, predictably, it's another sprawling piece of overlong Ameri trash.
Yes.
And frankly, speaking for myself, I really need to stop playing this crap because this is just eating up too much of what's left of my life.
Yeah? Well, it's not surprising. It's got a 64-page rulebook, which took us hours and hours to get through. The setup alone took a while. But look, I just want to obviously set the scene.
Yeah.
So I actually brought the rulebook in today so that I could just read a little bit of the flavor text and get you guys in the mood.
Because it is all about flavor.
It is. So welcome to New Angeles. New Angeles? New Angeles. Doesn't matter.
I believe it's pronounced Angeles.
Angeles. So it is the future. Mankind has spread itself out across the solar system with varying degrees of success. The moon and Mars are colonized. A plan to terraform Mars is well underway, hindered only by a civil war that has broken out on that planet. On Earth, a massive space elevator has been built, stretching up into the sky. It is the hub of trade in the solar system, and most people refer to it as the Beanstalk. So doesn't that just set the tone quite nicely for you guys?
Yeah.
Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff in the middle, but basically the middle then is about Jinteki and Haas Bioroid, how you've got Jinteki who, you know, they're building the human clones.
These are companies in this universe.
Exactly, and, right. And then you've got the Haas Bioroid who are creating robots with artificial intelligence, which are then known as Bioroids. But then it ends, and this is where we set the scene as players. In this hotbed of hatred, fear and prejudice, the men and women of New Angeles Police Department attempt to maintain order. Their job isn't easy since their charter requires them to patrol not only New Angeles, but also the Heinlein moon colony located...
Heinlein. Oh my God. Heinlein? You've just completely blown up your own sci-fi career there, Garth.
Across the Beanstalk. Nevertheless, they continue to guard the thin blue line between civilization and anarchy.
It's basically Blade Runner, the board game.
Yeah, I was going to say, in a nutshell. The world is certainly absolutely Blade Runner-ish. You know, replace replicants with Bioroids, virtually identical. And then obviously there's been a murder, I think it was a human murder, and then you're trying to pin it on a suspect.
Well, there's some different scenarios.
Yeah. Oh, okay, really?
Yeah, we only played one of them. Oh, yeah, there you go. That's maybe 9 different scenarios?
Yeah, there's a fair few, and I mean, you need to understand that these scenarios go for... It says 180 minutes on the box.
Oh.
Now, we were tipping the scales at 5 hours, which... 6 times 5 is not 180 minutes, I can guarantee you that. Now, we'd have to just let everyone know that the first hour was set up because this board game comes with a crap ton of pieces.
It's amazing. And I can see, you know, the similarity between Arkham Horror, another Kevin Wilson title, and this, with firstly, the crap ton of pieces that you mentioned, and secondly, that feel of... that you move around the board shopping or collecting stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of different stuff.
That's it. Look, I'll preface this by saying I did enjoy myself for the evening for the experience, but that experience was not one of trying to solve a murder, which still has not been done better than Cluedo. let's face it. Really.
That's a pretty big shame, isn't it?
It's not been done better than Colonel Mustard in the vomitorium... with
the dildo,
exactly. And instead, what you're doing with this is you're placing sort of, you know, points on people, trying to almost frame them up for the murder. And it does feel like just moving around the board, picking up pieces, shopping.
Although
stuff.
The interesting thing is
wandering around, picking up crap.
Yeah, that it is that you're actually, and I guess this, you know, you have to keep coming back to this yourself. You're not actually trying to solve the murder. You're actually trying to frame one person and make sure that another person doesn't get framed.
And you've got
we're all trying to do that differently.
And you've got to deal with your own personal crap at the same time.
Which I think is a really interesting mechanic. I really like the fact that each player gets their Twilight cards, and one of the actions you can do is you can play your light Twilight card, which is basically, you know, you're playing good luck on yourself. You're playing, you know, something that is going to be beneficial to you solving the case or resolving one of your own personal issues or resolving one of your plot lines, which is another thing I think is really interesting. Or you're going to collect these dark Twilight cards, which are basically screwing over the opponents. And I think they have really fantastic flavor to the game. I think they look beautiful, and I think they're really powerful, but sometimes a bit hard to actually get to the table.
And I don't think I've ever come across that in a game before, where you have that choice of, do I play a card to help me, or do I play a card to specifically screw a particular person? And, you know, when you get to draw cards each time, you pick which deck you're drawing from, your good deck or the bad deck of one of the other particular players. And so you can see Garth, you know, stocking up on cards that can screw me over. Trent hasn't got any, so I'm not going to have to worry about him, but I have to worry about Garth. That did add a lot of flavour to it for me.
I actually found Look, I agree that there are a couple of mechanics in this game that are really interesting. I haven't seen them deployed in other games, and that includes the jigsaw puzzle.
Yes, uncovering the conspiracy, I think, Trent.
As in, literally, it's a jigsaw puzzle that you have to assemble. And that is such an obvious idea for a board game. I'm amazed that nothing else is actually using that I'm aware of.
Jigsaw puzzles have been invented.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, was it whoever jigsaw puzzle companies are, they're using that one regularly.
Mr. and Mrs. Jigsaw invented
surely Ravensburger,
that's sure.
one of them.
But with those Twilight cards, I thought it was actually too easy for other players to mess with you on,
see,
your, on
I
your
would
go.
Uncategorically sort of disagree with you, because I had a card in my hand that I must have had for 4 out of the 5 hours we played, which would have prevented Mark from having his whole entire turn, but I couldn't meet the right prerequisites for it.
And yet, every time somebody started a go, there was a running joke while we were playing, okay? Because the cards are all worded, play this at the start of such and such's go.
Mm.
Oh, is it the start of your go?
I'm starting my turn now.
Well, therefore, I play this that stops you from doing anything. And there was an awful lot of that.
Yes.
Which just, you know, that...
It takes you out of the, you know, the main theme, doesn't it?
That symbolises the chaos that is, that is this game. It's a very, very difficult game to strategize, because you're dealing with a bunch of sort of separate things. You're dealing with the conspiracy. You're dealing with trying to solve the murder. You're dealing with your own plot cards as well, which we haven't even gotten into that. Mm. Those are three entirely separate ways to score the victory points that you need to win this game. I think it's awfully difficult to know at any point within the game where you really are.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, but I do like that when we're talking about the uncovering evidence side of things. So basically on your turn, what you're generally going to be doing is you're going to be moving with your little movement calipers almost, which I think are really quite clever, and they're a really nice touch. You're either going to draw a card, which is pretty straightforward. You're going to get a jump on the case, which is I become first player, which in our game absolutely had no impact whatsoever. But then I think the more interesting things is following up on a lead, where you get to either place some evidence on one of the suspects, because there's always going to be a number of players plus one number of suspects. And what we didn't mention is at the very start of the game, each player randomly gets given a suspect that they believe is guilty and a suspect that they believe is innocent. And that's where you're trying to frame the case on this person. Even if you get the same person for both, you are then considered to be obsessed with this person, and you get bonuses if they are incredibly guilty at the end of the game. And I really, really like that.
Mm.
When you go and uncover a lead, I think the fact that you've got to choose where you place the evidence on the suspect is really crucial. I think whether you choose to place evidence or uncover the conspiracy by taking a jigsaw piece is cool.
I watched a little video about this on YouTube, and Fantasy Flight describe it as being an exploratory narrative, which I think is fair over and above it being a game.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed myself.
Yep.
And I would try it again, but not in a hurry.
Yeah, look, I did enjoy it. I love these flavorful games. You know, I always wanted to get Arkham Horror to the table, and I never really did. You know, I love reading out the flavor text, doing the voices, all that stuff. And the really interesting balance in things like the baggage, where when you get to take baggage, you can take good baggage and give it to yourself, or bad baggage and give it to someone else, to develop the plot line, to make it harder for them. You know, it is that balance, again, with the Twilight cards of, do I do good stuff for me or bad stuff to someone else? I really like that balance. I enjoyed it. I don't want to play a five-hour game every night, but I'm certainly ready to play a game.
Yeah, I agree. It'd be absolutely beautiful if you could condense it down to that 180 minutes that it talks about. Yeah,
too long.
You know, I'll take some of the blame because it wasn't packed up really, really nicely, so it took a little while. But on the other note, I will say that because I got it secondhand from eBay, I was missing a few pieces, and I sent an email to Fantasy Flight saying I'm missing one token, and they sent me 4 boards worth of tokens to punch out. And
yeah,
I thought,
amazing.
Kudos to the designer, the publisher. That was fantastic.
No, no, no. That's just stuff they've got left over.
I was going
to
say, that's the secret, is they've got so many of these sitting in a warehouse somewhere.
No!
Because Android was a bit of a dud.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, it got a lot of really bad reviews just because it's so overblown and so much and pretty much what we've talked about.
And also, if I could just point out the ultimate irony, there's no Androids in it.
Weren't you an Android?
Bioroid.
Yes. You're a Bioroid, yes. Sorry.
There's no Androids in it at all.
Yeah.
What the hell was it called that for? All right. We're going to talk more about, in part, secondhand games and what Garth is doing to the Australian economy a little bit later in the show. And also, next, we'll talk Kickstarter with Mark on The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This here is Silly Joel and the Candyman. Silly Joel and the Candyman, Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh. Quick shout out to friend of the show, Richard Canning. Only one thing to say, Rich, Nice box.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Showing us off a custom-made box for one of his favourite board games. It was Elder Sign, yeah. Right? Okay, the Lovecraft theme.
The thing. Cthulhu Dicey one.
It's only a matter of time before somebody makes that business model work. You know? Do you know what I mean? Like I will
customize your game.
I will foam core your box.
Right.
For a fee.
Well, I have offered to give you $5 for you to foam core Cosmic Encounter. I will give you $10.
Listen.
And I want it recorded. $10 and you can foam core Android.
I foam cored
Descent
for you.
Yep.
For a birthday present.
Exactly right. Right.
And that, and it stops there.
Okay? I have a birthday this year, though, Trent.
Charity ends at home. We are here to talk about Kickstarter now. Stuff that you can spend your money on online, and you can wait 18 months, 2 years to see if you can get a return on that investment. Just like to point out, I've backed Two Rooms and a Boom and the Lovecraft Masks of Nyarlathotep prop set, neither of which have arrived.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just had, I just had Stuff and Nonsense arrive recently. And I don't know about stuff, but there's plenty of nonsense in it. It's about half a game, I reckon.
Right, so wow. Now that we're talking up Kickstarter, yeah, what
look,
else is
anyway,
there?
Anyway, look.
There are great games on there.
Look, absolutely there are. And it is a quiet time at the moment for Australian Kickstarters, because, of course, we had a heap of really successful ones. But a couple of note, The Road.
Yes.
A post-apocalyptic card game set in the Australian outback.
The Road.
It's called The Road.
Cormac McCarthy,
no,
The Road.
Not that road.
A different road.
A different road. Australian road.
It's a road with some roadkill on the side, yeah. You know.
A road that presumably goes through Broken Hill, where they film Mad Max 2.
Yeah, look, to look at it doesn't have a big Mad Max-y feel, which I expected, but it's sort of a things are going downhill a bit post-apocalyptic setting.
Sort of the zombie apocalypse. Yeah. You know, can you trust your fellow road walkers?
Yeah, it starts off being cooperative, and then gradually, as things do in a post-apocalyptic world, breaks down the relations between people. It's the first game by a group in Sydney called Words on Play, led by Dr. Malcolm Bryan. They are raising...
What's he a doctor of?
A doctor of game design, perhaps? I don't know.
It does not matter.
Yeah, look, it's 50% raised, so it's got 18 days to go. They've raised 2,500 of the 5,000. It looks interesting. Although I was a little bit concerned when in his introductory video, Dr. Ryan says, "The game is very nearly complete." That sort of sends a tremble through me straight away.
I want to know what he's a doctor of. Like, I mean, look, it's one thing if he's a GP, but is he a proctologist?
You can check it out on Kickstarter anyway. Okay. Now, the other thing that worries me about this, it's a card game.
Yes.
It's $70 for the full game.
Yeah.
Or you can get the budget version, which is just the rules and the cards. So the full game gives you tokens and dice as well. It does seem quite expensive, but look, it's worth a look. As I said, it's another Australian Kickstarter. Now, talking about Australian Kickstarters that are worth a lot, these guys, Campaign Coins, friend of the show, Mark Morrison, and his partners Andre and Penny from Campaign Coins. They've launched or relaunched the Campaign Coins. They've got starter sets and epic treasure. These are sweet, sweet metal coins. They're absolutely beautiful. You can get yourself one of the starter sets, and there's multiple starter sets, for $40.
And what would one use these metal coin sets for, please, Mark?
Oh, look, in the video, actually, it's really interesting. There's a DM, a dungeon master or a game master running a role-playing game, and he says, "Oh, you kill the goblin and on its body you find 10 coins and he throws 10 coins onto the table and all the players have to scrabble them, you know, like they're grabbing physical coins. I think it adds great physicality to role-playing. You can obviously use them in your board games as well. They are absolutely beautiful, these coins. So your $4 starter set, you get about 40 to 50 coins, and then you've got, you can get multiple starter sets. You can get the epic treasure set. It has 14 days to go. It's already 240% funded, so it's obviously going to happen. Check that one out.
Yeah, and the 240% is something like $100,000 worth of backing, so it's pretty substantial. And
oh,
what
my
God. Yeah, so people are dying, you know, to get this stuff. And as Mark said, the different styles of coins. You've got dungeon sets, you've got castle sets, you've got tavern sets, market sets, fantasy sets. But it's also good because they supply you with a PDF that tells you this is the kind of games and this is where you can use them. So, of course, they're justifying your purchase.
Of course.
So it's a no-brainer,
and
surely.
They are. I mean, I can't say it enough. They are beautiful looking. Mm. Lovely, you know, copper, gold, silver, platinum, different colours, different denominations. There's a huge variety of stuff you can get there.
Well, I have just started a new D&D campaign, so you'll have to refer to me as Pjorn, the Paladin Goliath, instead of Garth from now.
No, I'm not referring to you by your character name.
Oh, come on.
In real life, Garth. No,
but I can see.
No, that's not going to happen. Right, that's a slippery slope that you're on. Okay.
Fine. How about Hobnob the Halfling Rogue?
Stop. Okay, don't stop wearing deodorant. Okay, dress normally. Carry on like a normal human being who just happens to play RPGs in his spare time.
Okay, well, I'll do that, but I want my gold coins.
They do look sweet. One more thing just on Australian Kickstarters. Wastelanders, remember that was the one I talked about with the guys in the munition dump or whatever it was.
Was this with the $7,000 single back?
Yeah, exactly. Look, they ended up raising $13,015 and the funding got cancelled at that one. So it'll be interesting to see if it comes back. Now, a couple of other good ones. Post-Human. Now, unfortunately, this one only has one day to go. So potentially by the time people are listening to the podcast, it will have gone. But it's being funded. They were trying to raise $27,000. They raised $253,000. It looks like a really, really nice board game. And it's another post-apocalyptic game. It's definitely worth a look, but it'll be finished by the time you look, I'm afraid.
Thanks for telling us about
it. Yeah. But look, I wanted to mention because it does look really, really nice. One that is really interesting, and I think Dave might have pointed it out to me, Apocrypha Adventure Card Game. So this is put together by Lone Shark Games and Mike Salinka.
Amazing looking artwork on this. This is a monster RPG with cards or something?
Yeah, and it's the same, I guess, a very similar model to the Pathfinder Adventure game.
Well, he created Pathfinder.
And also part of this team are the people who created Betrayal at House on the Hill. So a horror-themed storytelling game. So they've sort of stuck the two of those things together in a role-playing game that's also a card game with character development. They're raising $66,666 because it's all themed like that. But they've already raised $105,000, so they're well over. 20 days to go. And interestingly, one of the writers is Jerry Holkins, also known as, I think he's Tycho, from Penny Arcade. So he's the writer of the Penny Arcade webcomic as opposed to the illustrator. The base set is $66. You get the base set plus the first chapter. Hmm. Similar model again to the Pathfinder game. $99, you get the base set and all chapters, which is really good value because I have paid over lots of money for the Pathfinder Adventure card game.
But you get lots of single plays out of that by yourself at home, don't you?
Yes, anyway. Next, moving on. It looks really interesting anyway. Now, talking of interesting, the Titan series.
You're right. Let's start being interested.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to hear about the Titan series because it's really interesting.
Okay. The Titan series gives you 9 gateway games.
Potentially.
3 a year.
Potentially.
Over 3 years. Some of and 9.
Read 6 years.
9 designers. So you've got Rob Davio, the Risk Legacy man, also Heroescape, and a whole bunch of other things. You've got Mike Elliott, who did Dice Masters, Quarriors, Thunderstone. You've got James Ernest from Cheap Ass Games. You've got, just a little guy called Richard Garfield, you know, who made a thing called Magic, and Netrunner, and King of Tokyo, and a whole bunch of other things. You've got Mike Salinka, who invented this Pathfinder Adventure card game and another game we just talked about. They're 5 of the 9. So it's a really interesting model. So basically, if you subscribe to the full thing, you're going to get 9 as yet undesigned, although they've got some hints, 9 gateway games over 3 years. After 135,000, they've already raised 100, and it's 37 days to go. So it's quite a long campaign.
Yeah, well, this one is sort of double the length of a normal Kickstarter campaign, but it's... What it's doing is it's a really different way of running a Kickstarter campaign. It's really good value, I think, because for $180, including postage, you can get all these 9 games. So, you know, that's really good value.
Mm.
The thing is, do people want to play for a game that they're not going to get till 2018?
Well, and the other thing is that they know almost nothing about.
Correct.
Like, so I think they're a long way along with three of them.
Can I ask, who is the company that's actually...
This is Calliope.
Calliope.
Calliope from Touro?
Is it? I believe it's pronounced Calliope.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. She's one of the Greek muses.
Again,
your lack of classical education is showing, gentlemen.
I'll go back to school.
Look, with those names involved, they are all top class game designers. Surely this has got to get over the line.
And look, you can just subscribe for $25 and pick which designer and which game you want.
The thing is that because it's three games a year, they're saying the first three will be out. Well, the thing is, they say in their Kickstarter by November, and then they say by 6 months after it's funded. So there's a couple of sort of flexible dates. But the point being is that you'll get three games, hopefully this year, three 2016, three 2017, although they say by 2018.
Yeah, it's a bit of a lucky dip. I don't know. But, you know, look, with those names, as you said, clearly it's going to fund. Do you take a chance? I guess. I mean, there's bound to be some great games in there.
I've changed my mind. I think it's going to be, because it's all gateway games, is going to be a bunch of simplistic like ideas that just don't work, that they're just going to dump on there.
Anyway, we'll see. Look, also out, Evolution, which is a fantastic game from Russia. This is the second edition. I have talked about this in the past. North Star Games are relaunching it, really brightly coloured, lots of new art. $55 for the base game, $75 including the flight expansion. They've already raised $89,000. They were only trying to raise $40,000, and it's only in its first couple of days. One Night Resistance, which is a mashup of One Night Werewolf and Resistance with indie cards and games and Bezier games. Looks interesting. It's only 854% funded already.
And it's probably only the 854th iteration of Werewolf or the Resistance now,
that's
surely.
That's right. Battle of the Electric Vikings came back on again, Trent, because it didn't get funded last time. So it's going again, a very short run, eight days to go, but they still need $1,200. Yeah. You could back it.
Had a good look at that, decided otherwise.
Okay. Human Interface Nakamura Tower.
What?
This is a post... industrial game.
Nakamura Tower, isn't that the name of the building in Die Hard?
Well, I thought that too, but it's also the name of one of the characters and the companies in this. It's sort of an Imperial Assault / Descent game in a cyberpunk world. Beautiful minis, nice board. It's sort of like a cross between a minis game and a board game. It does look really interesting. A lot of flavour. It's already 110% funded, so they've raised 35,000 poons. It's still got 28 days to go. It does look really interesting, and that's it from me.
Okay, now if you prefer to spend your money over the counter at one of your friendly local game stores instead of online and, you know, just sitting back and waiting for years, possibly.
And know what you're going to get.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
be able to touch it.
We have a good friend of ours who has actually taken the plunge to buy into one of his friendly local game stores. I mean, he's actually staking money in it. He's running the business. Why would anyone want to do that?
Yeah,
we're going to find out.
Enough money into it as it is.
We're going to find out when we talk to our mate Andrew, who's joining us next on the Dice Man Cometh. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Rock and roll on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh here tonight. That was a song, Kicking by Torch. I hate it how when the song finishes, it goes off the screen. Anyway, Kicking by Torch, you're with the Dice Men Cometh, with Trent, Mark and Garth, and our special guest.
That's right. We want to talk about our friendly local game store, or one of them here in Hobart, which is goes by the name of Area 52. Now, we are supporters of this store, and they've helped us out with some prizes and stuff in the past. We've also been critics of the store in the past as well.
Yeah.
We've lambasted them for some of their pricing policies and their stock policies, while sympathising that business people here in Hobart have to, you know, at the logistical end of the earth, have to listen to idiots like us on the radio take the crap out of them. So here's a chance for one of them to get their own back.
Okay.
Let me introduce our friend Andrew Schwartz, a.k.a. The Schwartz, who has just taken the financial plunge and actually taking over the Area 52 store. The Schwartz, good evening.
Good evening.
You know, talking to the microphone.
Yeah, come
there,
closer,
that's,
Schwartz.
That's what they're for.
Get into it.
Yeah, yeah. So how does it feel to have mortgaged your future on a building that you're not legally allowed to actually sleep in.
No, I am legally allowed to sleep in it. There's actually a shower and a dishwasher already set up in it.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't legally mean you're... I mean, you know, because presumably at some point you're going to have to give up your home when the bum drops out of the games business.
Look, as long as I stay in there, you know, and then you just kind of hope for the best and pray that nobody knows you're actually there.
Look, let's start by finding out why you've taken this plunge, because, I mean, I know you're a passionate gamer from way back, so maybe tell us a little bit about your gaming credo.
Yeah, so coming back to that, I'm from the States, of course, and I've always been a huge, huge game guy. I mean, starting out Magic the Gathering, AD&D, starting out with Warhammer, all of those. I saw the rise of games like Catan that really started to kick it off. And I just looked at these and I thought, you know, I love selling these. I love showing these to people. I love talking about these to people. And there's no better way than to have your own shop where you can actually find new product, find new games nobody's seen before, and you can show it to them. And that's really what I'm really passionate about.
And is this really, I mean, let's face it. This is an excuse to fly all around the world, going to the game fairs and conventions and Comic-Con and everything on the proviso that you're actually looking to buy stuff at the shop, isn't it? It's really just an excuse for that.
I've already got my tickets to PAX. I just 100% paid for.
We should explain a little bit, though. Area 52 is part of a larger store here in Hobart that's fairly well established. It's split between, of all things, there's a bloody news agency kind of thing in one part of it. You've got books as well.
And cards.
You've stocked games, and that's gradually taken over more and more of the shelves. I'm not trying to provide advertorial here for the store, but it has grown.
Yes.
And I guess this is in response to numbers. So what I'm actually interested in, I don't know if you want to, how openly you can talk about this, but how are games actually selling for you? How's it changed over the past couple of years? Because you've been working there for a while, and now you're stepping in to take it over.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because traditionally in Hobart, sales and everything drop off right about now, right after Anzac Day. It gets cold. People don't want to go out into the street. People don't want to go out. But we've seen this massive increase in people who come in. They get board games. They get them to play at home. They get them to play with their kids. And previously, where everything was quiet, nobody was out, we're getting tons of people coming in.
Well, that's great, because now is the time of the year that you want to be spending that time at home, around the table, with your fire going in the background, playing those games with the family. It's perfect time for it, surely.
But have games become... are you selling more games? Are you selling more games than you are books? Because you sell comics as well. So, like, how is that changing? How big a part of the business is it for you?
I think as we become more known for it, it's definitely become a larger part of the business. I mean, the fact that we started dealing with more wholesalers and more businesses that actually import these too has also been a big effect, because previously we were limited on how many copies of a game we could get in. I mean, Australia is very, very limited in what they bring in. You'll see a lot of distributors will run out of these games, and it's just impossible to get it anywhere in Australia.
Yeah, it has been difficult often to get copies of games. You know, the first print run is gone. We don't even see it. The second print run is a long way away. So it's great to have a local store, or more than one local store, that can often now get these copies for us.
Well, let's talk about distribution and just maybe take the time to sort of explain what that actually is, because you've got the publisher of the game printing something up in China, and maybe shipping that back to the States to their headquarters, maybe, if they're, you know, somewhere in the States. And then they have a contract with a distributor who then eventually gets it to us. And can you tell us a little bit about that relationship between the distributor and the retailer?
Sure. And actually, it's funny you mentioned China, because if they just printed in China, there would probably be more copies. A lot of these games are actually printed in the U.S., Mayfair Games. Seven Wonders is printed, last I checked, in France. A lot of these companies are not actually printing in China.
Germany, a lot of printing in Germany of Euro games as well.
And that kind of contributes to the cost on a lot of these shippings. You're seeing these, in the U.S., there usually is a unique distributor for these games. Like, you would deal with either the company themselves would have a distributor wing. But in Australia, we just get catch-as-catch-can. you'll see all these games kind of trickle into Australia as they can find them.
Yeah, well, I remember we had Caroline in just before Christmas talking about those games for Christmas, and one of them was Sushi Go, and that was just impossible to get. I think she was saying she got 6 copies, maybe, for Christmas, and only now have you started to get some more of them back, and I know I had to find some in New South Wales when I was on a holiday recently, and I went to a shop and there was 1 copy. It's just incredible. It's just hard to get games, isn't it?
Yeah, the shops cannot meet the demand in a lot of cases. I mean, considering that there are only 3 major companies that deal in games currently in Australia at this time, you just cannot meet the demands of all the small markets.
And let's not necessarily name names here, but I have heard the inside story that at least one of those companies was still operating on a sort of pen and paper admin basis, had not modernized their office
at
all.
They're going old school, D&D old school.
Is that right?
There may be a business that still has on their website a contest from Catan in 2004.
And do they roll a D20 to see how many copies of the game you get?
It's just about that. I mean, you'll order it, and then you'll find out that their website wasn't updated recently, and the spreadsheet that they pass around that has all the copies of the game isn't quite accurate. Or they lost the copies.
I think one of the great moves for this local game store was when they brought the games. For people who don't know, they've got an upstairs section, which was the popular culture part of the store, where you had your comics, your posters, your games.
That was the really stinky part.
Yeah, that's right. And now they've moved most of the board games downstairs to where the books are, and I think it's much more available to the public now.
Yeah, the actual public can wander in and see them by accident, yeah.
So, look, I think that was a really great move. Hats off for thinking of that and getting it, normalising it, I guess, as opposed to keeping it for just the geeky guys like us. Have you got some other new exciting stuff going to happen that you can tell us about?
Well, coming down, I mean, of course we've got the international tabletop stuff coming out in July, only 3 months after it was...
Tell us about that, because there's been some controversy about those Tabletop Day packs. A, they're full of tripe, and B...
they're 3 months late?
And really expensive.
Yeah. Well, the most recent one had $400 in shipping added to it.
Oh my God!
In shipping. It was absolutely atrocious. And then most of the stuff that you get in it is promos. I've actually cut it down compared to last year. You don't give enough to give to everybody who comes in the door, which is unfortunate. If you compare it to the free RPG day, it's just not of the same caliber. Mm. But they're always late. Last year when we ordered it, we didn't get it for 2 months after. And at that point, we forgot about it. And then all of a sudden, we received this stuff and we didn't know what to do with it. It was not very well done in Australia, but part of the problem is that they actually sell it to a distributor who then turns around and sells it to us.
Okay, look, I think there's still some interesting thoughts we have, but we're going to come back in a minute, straight after this tribute to Trent. Yes, that was specially for you, Trent.
Yeah, nice.
The
nice.
Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
No, thank you.
The Smiths with Big Mouth Strikes Again.
No, good.
You have got a Morrissey tattoo, haven't you?
Now, exciting news, and I want to ask Andrew about this. Just arrived in my postbox, the official Dice, as they get thrown around the room, the official Dice Men Cometh business card on the front. It's business at the front, party at the back with the Dice Men Cometh. So it's business on the front with all our details, but on the back...
It is invaluable.
I don't know how people could play games without one of these. The official Dice Men Cometh Take Backsy card.
This has been bubbling away in our minds for a little while. The idea is that it's a Take Backsy card that is valid for use in every game, and it says so in the rules of the use of the card?
It does. It says, this card may be used just once per game in every board game ever invented anywhere ever.
So there it is in black and white. The idea is that when you finish your go, someone else has started their go, you suddenly realize you've made a mistake, you can play this card, okay, and correct part of your go.
Exactly right. And I think that you, Trent, will love this card because
you get plenty of use out of it, that's for sure.
I don't know, at least 13 games, probably more that I can remember off the top of my head, that you have really needed to facilitate a Take Backsy.
There is, however, a consequence to playing the Take Backsy card a bit too often. We might leave that for you to discover yourself, because we're going to try and get these out to some of our friendly local game stores and get them on the counter and get people to use them and have some fun with it. Can we get these on the counter at Area 52, Schwartz?
Oh, of course. I want to use this card too.
You don't want to be with Trent, that's for sure.
All right, now, talking to cards, one thing I really wanted to ask about as far as games go are the things like Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh!, and, I don't know, maybe to a lesser or a greater extent, your X-Wings and Star Wars Armada games that I refer to as plastic and cardboard crack that keep kids coming back and just spending so much money. Is that like the backbone of a business like yours, is having as many titles like that as possible, providing you with some kind of base income? How does that work and factor into what you do?
Well, they're quite well done, and one of the things that I wish more board games would get into, and actually we're seeing this now with Seven Wonders, is they give out tournament kits too. So they have built-in promotion, they have built-in prizes, they have built-in events, which really help drive in the kids and the sales with that. But yeah, I mean, something like a Pokemon, they're cyclical. So you'll, for a little while, Pokemon will go out of fashion, then it'll come back. They're great, great, great sort of jump-in points for kids. So kids will start with a game like that, and then they'll move on and graduate to another product or other games or other board games. But they most certainly are the backbone of almost any game store nowadays.
Well, what's the biggest seller for you in that collectible realm, and how much money would you make off it, if you know, roughly?
Well, if you look at something, take for example Magic. We'll just go with that. Mm. They've got a new set coming out called Modern Masters. If you look at Modern Masters box sets are one of the most on-demand things you can get. They have these boxes come out, and people will just snap them all up in pre-orders, and they're amazing. I mean, you can see a 15 to 20% jump in your profits for that month.
Wow.
Just from that product alone.
And you were telling us about one particular individual who spent how much?
One particular individual who spent into four figures in pre-orders.
Wow.
On just one pre-order.
Wow. It's interesting, Andrew, you said about how they come, you know, they come packaged, there's launch kits, there's these sort of things, because didn't we see just recently the merger of Asmodee taking over Fantasy Flight? They're bringing out these, did they call it Asmoplay?
Yeah.
Where it's exactly that sort of thing, where it's a kit with play mats, a couple of copies of the game to get people to play in store for competitions and win prizes. Do you think you're going to get into that sort of stuff?
We are actually looking at that. That kind of goes back into what was going on with what I was saying earlier about...
About Seven Wonders?
No, Australia not getting anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
These might not actually make it to Australian shores. We put in our orders for them, but it's currently up in the air if they're actually coming here. But that's actually something Fantasy Flight originally started doing, based off Wizards of the Coast originally doing.
Okay.
They have a pack for D&D, they have a pack for Magic, all of this. And then Fantasy Flight ended up coming out with one for X-Wing and all their other games. Now it's gone on Asmodeus.
We talk a lot about Kickstarter on this show, and Kickstarter often has pledge levels for retailers to get, let's say, 5-6 copies of a game. Is Kickstarter competition for retailers, or is it a help somehow?
In reality, it really varies on how the business behind the Kickstarter wants it to be. Because you'll see it in some cases like Cards Against Humanity, where they don't give it out to retailers. You buy it from them. That's all they care about. But then you see other companies like, for example, Ogre, Steve Jackson Games. We can buy that. We can actually get the Kickstarter thing.
They're all about retailers, those guys.
Yeah. And a lot of these companies actually provide the Kickstarter rewards. So you'll see these gaming companies will be printing it for the Kickstarter people. So they'll then offer it to retailers.
Okay. I mean, look, I saw a couple of really interesting figures lately, or I heard them on the Spiel podcast that I always try and listen to. The US holiday season, so Christmas, New Year's, those sales, $18 billion of sales in toys and games. Licensed products make up 31% of that. So your Doctor Who Monopolies and your Star Wars My Little Pony crossover Cluedos. And apparently sales of games and puzzles were up 9%. So games obviously is going in the right direction, Andrew. We wish you all the best with it. Obviously, we're going to hit you up for lots of free stuff.
Yeah, man, good luck. Thank you. You're going to need it.
Now, one more important thing before we go.
Yeah, are we going to talk about our competition, Mark?
We are. What's the name of that competition,
Garth? It's the Grail Games Grail Game Competition, I'll have you know. Absolutely. Now, basically, we've run this short, sharp campaign, this little competition. We are only 1 week in, but we've only got 1 week to go. And what you need to do, and I must give a shout out to a few people, but I won't do that now because we've got lots of entries already. All you need to do is tell us the game that you want there to be, your holy grail of game, the game that just doesn't exist yet, but you need it in your life. Just send us an email to dicemencometh@gmail.com. Send it in. You've only got a week to go. This will be drawn this time next week on Thursday, the 30th of April. So get those entries in.
And look, it is a great competition, and you can win a copy of 11zs and a copy of 101, which we had a game of in the pub tonight, Garth.
Yeah, we had a game only, 2 hours ago?
In fact, we played 3 games of it, didn't
yes,
we
did, Mark, and I won 3 out of 3, so that was beautiful. I love this game. Thank you very much.
And most importantly, your Dice Men Cometh Take Backsy card is valid for use in all of those games. And any game that you might make up in your head is also valid for use in that.
Yeah, well, we might have to get, I don't know, maybe someone who wins the competition might have to get some take backsy cards in the mail, I think.
That'll happen.
No, look, I mean, we played 101 and another small box game. It was brilliant. And it was, you know, played in 10, 15 minutes. It was really simple to teach.
It was easy to learn. And look, the only thing I can think, Garth, is that my multi-dimensional brain wasn't able to work in binary with ones and zeros. It was just such a simple level. I don't know. I'm going to say that's my excuse. Did you have one of our entries that you were going to read out?
Yeah, well, I thought I'd read out one that came through because it's, you know, there's so many, but I'll get the one. And now it's really quick, and I thought, Trent, you might be into this game. So this is from Cameron Adams, friend of the show. His grail game would be a Blade Runner Hidden Traitor co-op game, catching replicants and some origami.
You know, origami is the one mechanic that Android probably doesn't have, but it comes close.
Well,
I reckon
if you add patch history into the Android sort of systems, then maybe that's getting close.
Oh, yeah. And look, I want to give a shout-out to Edward Robert Williams, who sent us a message on our Facebook page before asking us what are our views on role-playing games. Edward, have you listened to this show?
We love them.
Goliath Paladin.
We love all flavours. We're going to talk more about role-playing games, dice games, card games, lots of games next time when the Dice Men cometh. But until then,
bye.
Have a good week. See you all.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.